Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. My first guest today is renowned oncologist and pioneer in integrative medicine and epigenetics, Dr. Mitchell Gaynor. He's developed a revolutionary approach to healing at the genetic level, preventing cancer, heart disease, and diabetes, increasing brain function, and reversing habits that lead to obesity and premature aging. In the second part of today's show, we'll take a peek into Meniere's disease. We'll hear from an ENT doctor who specializes in treating MD, and also from an author who lives with Meniere's, and she interviewed more than 50 others who also live with that disease. I guess there's not a lot written about it, so we'll learn more about that later today. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Dr. Mitchell Gaynor to the show. He's the founder and president of Gaynor Wellness and a clinical assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College with more than 25 years of experience with treating patients. His work has been featured in the New York Times, and he's appeared on many national television programs, including Good Morning America, The Dr. Oz Show, The Martha Stewart Show, and he has a great new book out, really interesting, really informative. It's called The Gene Therapy Plan, Taking Control of Your Genetic Destiny with Diet and Lifestyle. Dr. Mitchell Gaynor, welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, good to have you here. And this is a really, I think, a really well-developed book. And I'm excited to share this with our listeners today. But first of all, let's look at what inspired you to enter the field of oncology in the first place, and specifically the study of nutrigenetics. You dedicated the book to your mom, who you say started teaching you the importance of healthful foods when you were 6 years old.
Yes. Well, she actually had passed away of breast cancer, which she contracted when I was six, succumbed to it when I was nine, and both my brother and I both became medical oncologists. And I did my training at Cornell, and as part of that training, I was at Rockefeller University studying molecular biology, specifically the way genes could regulate themselves through various foods, nutrients, and environmental toxins. And so what I learned was is that what I had been taught in medical school was entirely wrong. You know, in medical school, we were taught that if we had a strong family history of cancer, a lot of people that were overweight, a lot of people that had premature aging, that was just going to be our genetic destiny. And what we know now is that our genes are dynamic, and the foods we put in our body, for good or for harm, determines our genetic destiny throughout our lifetime, and it's never too late to change it.
Right, and I think this is an important distinction to make, because I've heard people claim we can do this, but you say in the book we cannot alter the genes we were born with, but we can change how they're expressed over the course of our life through those targeted foods and supplements. And this book is all about balance. So talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, basically, if you're putting a lot of white sugar, a lot of white flour, a lot of heat-damaged vegetable oils in your body, you're turning on a lot of genes that promote inflammation, that promote cancer, that promote premature aging and heart disease, as well as diabetes. And the other thing that's very, very important for people to know is that if you're putting in a lot of foods like turmeric, which is very anti-inflammatory, garlic, which turns on a lot of detoxifying enzymes, resveratrol, which is found in the skin of red grapes, that you're literally doing gene therapy on yourself for good. So it's really your choice. It's a matter of lifestyle, and it's a matter of food choice.
Now, you do talk about the science in the book here, but it's written in very accessible terms. And I think it's important to understand the science and how things interact with the body. But who did you write this book for specifically?
I wrote the book really for everybody, basically for parents, for people of all ages, because I want to teach people that it's possible to change their genetic destiny. And we're living in a world that is so polluted right now. There are so many environmental toxins which we're all exposed to. And, for instance, we can turn on detoxifying genes. The three top foods that I talk about that are very, very good against for turning on detoxifying enzymes are garlic, black raspberry powder, which you can mix in yogurt, which you could mix in water. Those are the types of foods that actually turn on detoxifying genes. And this isn't just theoretical. There was a study out of Johns Hopkins just a few years ago that looked at women with and without breast cancer and found the women with the lowest levels of the most important detoxifying gene had the highest risk of developing breast cancer.
Wow. Now, I've not heard of black raspberry powder before. This is just like a nutrient supplement, is it?
It is, because black raspberries are loaded with ellagic acid, but the problem is they're out of season quite frequently, and you can get the organic black raspberry powder, mix it with water, mix it with juice, and it is very, very, very powerful in terms of being able to turn on detoxifying enzymes. It also has been found to turn on 200 different tumor suppressor genes.
Okay. So I just want to let listeners know we're not having the best sound quality because I think Dr. Gaynor's on a cell phone here. But we're talking about the Gene Therapy Plan today, which is his new book, just packed full of really, really great information. And Dr. Gaynor, you've got some amazing, absolutely astounding examples in the book of how some people have come to you and through diet and sometimes also through chemotherapy and other treatments. With that integrative approach, you have literally turned things around for them. And I'm thinking of the one young lady who, whose doctor had told her, you know, book yourself into hospice and prepare for end of life, and yet she's still going strong today. Would you share that story with us?
Absolutely. It was a woman named Marissa Harris who I talked about at the beginning of the book. She was diagnosed 18 years ago with stage 4 ovarian, stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And she did chemotherapy with me, but was given 3 to 6 months to live and is still alive and in remission this many years later following my program. She used to work for a big financial company. Now she's a cancer coach teaching people what she did. And really the goal is everybody is walking around with dormant cancer cells in their body. We know that from autopsy studies of people who died in their 20s from other things. And one in two people in America are going to hear the words, you have cancer, at some point in their life. So if you have dormant cancer cells, you want to keep them dormant. If you have active cancer cells, you want to make them back to being dormant and keep them that way. And the key thing is to put in a lot of nutrients in your body that are going to induce dormancy by turning on tumor suppressor genes, which are I talk about extensively throughout the book.
Right. One of the other stories that I found interesting, because I think this has been on the increase, hepatitis has been on the increase lately. We've heard a lot about it seems. And you had a young man with autoimmune hepatitis and liver failure, who the Mayo Clinic had said should be on the list for a liver transplant. And what happened with him?
Yes, they told him at Cornell and Mayo Clinic, they put him on high-dose steroids. He had a type of hepatitis. He was a college student at the time. He's since graduated from college, but he had autoimmune hepatitis, which is treated with very high dose of steroids, and was told to get a liver transplant within the year he would need one. And I treated him with many nutrients that we use for liver injury, things to help the immune system. He was able to get off the steroids within 3 months, and to this date, it's now 4 years later, he was able to return to college after 3 months, never needed more steroids, and certainly never needed a liver transplant.
Mm. So pretty impressive, well, quite astounding stories, actually, when you think somebody's been told to get a liver transplant or check into hospice, you know. It's quite amazing the power of the body to heal itself when we're doing the right thing. So if we do nothing else, what would you say are the top two or three things we should start doing?
Well, I would say the top thing is to know your vitamin D level. Especially 25-hydroxy vitamin D. The reason I say that is it's important in everything I talk about in the book, in aging, in cancer, in your risk for diabetes, in your risk for being overweight, and almost everybody needs a vitamin D supplement. The reason is the most you can get in a Western diet for vitamin D is 350 units. The least anybody needs is about 1,000 units.
Wow.
If you're in the Northeast, you need about 5,000 units a day. So everyone should know their 25-hydroxy vitamin D level. Also, fish oil is absolutely key, either to get enough omega-3s from cold, deep-water fish or from a supplement like flaxseed, chia, or pumpkin seed. Those are great mixing smoothies. They're loaded with omega-3s, and those help increase immune function and help increase detoxification and turn off tumor promoter genes.
Okay. And so the book you've also included, I've read a lot on epigenetics and gene therapy, but this is, I think, probably the most comprehensive book I've read. You have a lot of what you call, I'm just trying to get it here, gene therapy fact. So you bust facts from myth in here. There are a lot of recipes in here for smoothies and salad dressings and stuff like that. You also list in the book different targeted nutrition tips for different diseases, obesity, heart disease, cancer. So if somebody's looking to prevent aging, what are a couple of the tips there that we should focus on?
That's a great question. One of the biggest causes of aging is something called advanced glycation end products. And what these are from heat damage, things that are cooked in dry heat or heat-damaged oil. So the best ways to prevent aging are to cook your food in either moist heat, steam it, don't char it, and also uses your cooking oil, organic coconut oil. That has the highest smoke point. It's most resistant to oxidative damage. Second best is grapeseed oil. Third best is butter. You should also include olive oil in your diet every day. It's loaded with anti-inflammatories and loaded with anti-cancer nutrients, but that is best drizzled over something that's been cooked or something raw.
So I want to know, what haven't we talked about that you think listeners have to know about this book and about this therapy plan, this gene therapy plan?
Well, I think the most important thing is people need to understand that they're doing gene therapy on themselves for good or for harm every time they're putting food in their body. And it's easy to make these changes. It's never too late to bring back balance into your diet. The reason most diets have not worked is they leave you deficient in something that promotes detoxification, promotes tumor suppression, or is anti-inflammatory. All this is occurring at the genetic level.
Right. And I think it's important to share that since you're an oncologist, you're an integrative medical doctor, you're not against traditional medical treatments. You're talking about integrating this and finding the balance, right?
Absolutely. I use the latest in traditional medical treatments, but I also believe very strongly in nutrition, exercise, yoga, and meditation.
And you talk about that a lot, about the meditation. What's the best website for listeners to find out more about you and the work you're doing?
The best website, where I have a free newsletter, that people can sign up for. Also, I have free meal plans, juicing recipes. It's called Gene Changer, GeneChanger.com.
Okay, GeneChanger.com. So, Dr. Mitchell Gaynor, a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Basically, you're not the victims of the genes you were born with, and you're also not the victims of the environment you're exposed to. Your genes are dynamic, and like life itself, they can change day to day. It's never too late to take control of your gene expression.
Right, and I think this book's a great help. Thank you for putting it out. Dr. Mitchell Gaynor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
The book, again, is called The Gene Therapy Plan, Taking Control of Your Genetic Destiny with Diet and Lifestyle. And like I said, I've looked at a lot of these type of books on epigenetics and promises to change your genes, and I think this is about the most comprehensive book I've read, and also the most accessible. It's really easy to read. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And again, I apologize for the sound quality on our first segment with Dr. Mitchell Gaynor. I think he got called away. We ended up having to do the interview on a cell phone at the last minute. And that's certainly not an ideal situation there. But I decided to go ahead with the interview because the book is so good and so well written. It's packed full of really great information. So I hope it wasn't too difficult for you to catch that. Well, coming up next, we're going to share some insights into a disease I'd not heard of. It's more common than you'd think, but not a lot apparently has been written about it. And according to someone who lives with Meniere's disease, many doctors don't take it seriously enough. Before I bring her on, though, I wanted to talk with a doctor who specializes in this disease to get a medical perspective. So we're first going to hear from Dr. Murray Grossen. He's an ear, nose, and throat specialist at Cedars Center in Los Angeles. As an otolaryngologist, Dr. Murray Grossen provides medical and surgical care for patients suffering from complications, diseases, and disorders of the head and neck, including the ears, nose, and throat. His research publications include tinnitus and non-drug, non-surgery sinus therapy, and his newest book is called Free Yourself from Sinus and Allergy. But I wanted to chat with him in particular about Meniere's disease. And so we began our conversation with me asking Dr. Grossen to define the difference between dizziness and vertigo.
Vertigo is actually the room is spinning. I'm sitting in the chair, but the room is actually moving, or I am moving. In other words, you're in one of those rides in Coney Island, or if you spin around yourself fast enough, then you stop, then the room continues to move. Now, dizziness can be anything. I'm lightheaded, I'm drunk, I don't feel steady, and so when the vertigo is light, not too bad, I'm dizzy, but if I hold on, I can make it. But a true vertigo, it's pretty hard to go from A to B.
Okay, and so then is that a symptom of Meniere's disease?
Yes, it's a symptom.
And so describe to us, if you would, what Meniere's disease is then.
If you imagine that you have a carpenter's ruler and there's a bubble that tells you when you're level, and then when you have an incline, the bubble moves up and so on. Well, in Meniere's disease, that fluid is gotten hard and it's pressing on the glass, and so the little tiny hairs that are moved when you move yourself, they're being pressed, and so the feeling is that the room is moving. Now, the room can be moving from right to left, it can be moving up and down, or it can be moving sideways. There's three different ways that it can go, but that is the feeling that the room is moving, or you yourself are moving,
right,
is vertigo. Now, seasick is something different. Seasick is a feeling of moving, but it's directly caused by the constant, back and forth of the boat.
Okay.
So there is a difference between lots of people are dizzy because they don't have a good vestibular system through age or whatever, but the room is not directly spinning.
Okay. So and I've heard that in many cases, this can actually be very debilitating if somebody has Meniere's disease and
extremely.
So what would it would be pretty incapacitating if you. It would be like having a permanent hangover. I almost think, walking around,
exactly.
Not having your balance, and so what possible treatment is there? Is it curable?
Yes, since it's caused by an increase in fluid pressure, we lower the fluid pressure, and we do this with a medication which is not exactly a diuretic. There is an enzyme called carbonic anhydrase, which puts fluid into the anterior chamber of the eye, and it's the same enzyme that works in the inner ear. So one of those is called Diamox, another one is called methozolamide, and these are very effective for Meniere's. The one that I use is called methozolamide.
Now, is that something that once it's done, it's taken care of, or is it something that somebody has to have a prescription for and keep repeating?
Yes, but you also have to try to prevent the attack, and you do that by having the person go low on salt. Now, it's very difficult for someone to take a salt-free diet. Have you ever tried it?
Yeah,
it's rough.
It is, and I'm not a fan of salt, but I still take a lot of it. Yeah.
Yes. Well, the trick is to have a person drink distilled water. When you drink distilled water, then you remove salt because you have to take salt out when you urinate. So my patient can eat a hamburger, at McDonald's, but then when he gets home, he has to drink a couple of glasses of distilled water.
Okay. Now, I know on your website at grossoninstitute.com, you talk a lot about lifestyle being important in all of our health issues, which we know, but we don't always, absorb in our situation. What other lifestyle considerations do we have around Meniere's disease?
Well, the worst thing is that you really have to treat every episode, because when you've had a great deal of Meniere's disease, sometimes there's a terrible complication called drop attacks, where you simply drop to the ground with no warning whatsoever. And unfortunately, that can happen when someone's had Meniere's disease a long, long time. That one we have no treatment for.
Okay, so there's no treatment for the drop attack situation.
No.
Any other lifestyle situations that we...
Well, again, a healthy diet, avoiding certain foods seem to be more bringing on the attack than other foods. And so when you find that food, you have to learn to avoid it.
And you said that this comes and goes. So does the severity of how quickly, how often it comes and goes, does it vary in each person?
Oh, tremendous. It can be three attacks a year. It can be half of an attack a year. The big problem with Meniere's is that you have typically the vertigo, you have the hearing loss, you have the ringing in the ear, and you have a sensation of fullness in the ear. But a person does not have to have all four.
I see.
And that's where the problem comes in, because somebody comes in and all they have is ringing in the ears, and they don't have the others. It's kind of hard to decide if this is Meniere's disease or a different type of tinnitus.
Okay, so how would you determine that? What kind of tests would you have to go through?
Real experience.
Okay.
It's sort of like somebody coming in with high blood pressure. They may have a headache, they may have urinary problems, they may have difficulty in functioning, and so on. But it still may be high blood pressure. But of course, there you can measure the blood pressure. Here, we don't really have a way of measuring the pressure in the ear. We can measure the hair cells of hearing and things like that, but that doesn't really give us objective diagnoses. Now, we can also get an idea of the function of the vestibular system. That can be tested. What we do is we stimulate the inner ear with either hot or cold water or hot or cold air, and then that gives us an idea of what the condition of the vestibular organ is. But it's really, in other words, a person might have vertigo, but they do not have it in acute attacks. So that makes a difference between something wrong with the organ of the balance on one side and not.
Interesting.
In other words, you can have vertigo but not have acute attacks, and the cause of vertigo are many.
Okay.
In inadequate circulation to the ear and so on, or pressure from some growth on the organ, on the nerves of the inner ear.
Right, so we definitely shouldn't ignore it. We should get ourselves along to a doctor, right?
Right, right.
So very interesting. I've learned a lot. I understand the difference now on a layman level. What do you think listeners need to know that we haven't already shared?
Well, the basic thing is if you have any of these symptoms, dizziness, ringing in the ears, hearing loss, a feeling of fullness in the ear, that pretty much means that it is Meniere's, and you do have to see a doctor.
And that, of course, was Dr. Murray Grossen, and you can find out more about him at grossoninstitute.com. So we're going to talk next with somebody who's actually lived with Meniere's disease since 2006. She interviewed more than 50 people who also suffer. She said it changed her life, as you can imagine. And not a lot was written about it, and not many people, not many doctors were very interested in dealing with it. So she set out on her own journey to try and get some answers for herself, and we'll talk with her in just a few minutes. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Jude and Paul Ponton at Whispering Dragon in Seattle, we cover the world of animals. This week, May 17th, it's an encore presentation of Animal World. Hear Dr. Nils Rasmussen, best practitioner, work his magic with remote treatments for collars. Plus, he works on a cat patient live in the studio. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, adventure, facing the unknown head-on, and finding spirituality in the most unlikely of places with the mystical backpacker and the cyclist who rode a tandem bike through 81 countries. Keep up with show news on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and follow on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. And be sure and tune in live every Monday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
1150kknw.com, your connection to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we just talked with Dr. Murray Grossen from the Grossen Institute about Meniere's disease. He gave us some definitions there from a clinical perspective. We're now going to talk with somebody who's suffered with this since 2006 herself. She's written a book called Vertigo, When the World Spins Out of Control, Meniere's Disease, Benign Positional Vertigo, and Other Vestibular Illnesses. And let me tell you a little bit about my guest. She is Linda Howard Zanana. I'm not sure I'm saying her last name correct. So, Linda, how do we say your last name?
Pretty much that way. Okay. I say Zonana.
Okay. So we're talking with Linda Howard Zonana, a licensed clinical social worker with a master's degree from the Smith College School for Social Work. And let me bring her on and we'll tell her story in her own words. Linda, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on.
So you were feeling pretty healthy, and as I understand it from reading your book, on Monday, February 20th, 2006, you were home on a winter break from your job. You were down in the basement just doing normal everyday chores. And what happened?
Well, I had had some pressure in my head for the previous 2 days and thought perhaps I was coming down with a sinus infection or something. But I wasn't very worried about that. And then I really got a very sudden onset of dizziness, and I don't know that it was vertigo initially. I thought I might faint. So I got down on the floor because I thought I'd be better off lying on the floor if I did faint. But it accelerated enormously quickly, so I lay down, and then it began to feel more like what you would call vertigo. If I moved any part of my body, it would get worse. I came to realize that perhaps I could sit up, but I could not possibly stand. So that was really how it began. The vertigo that I did have then and generally tend to have had subsequently is not quite the way it's described by most people who describe it as the world turning around them, like the world is whirling.
Right.
In my case, it feels more like my brain is just sort of sloshing, more like clothes in a washer, I'd say. And, of course, the definition, the technical definition of vertigo is the perception of motion when there is none. So
right.
That would be true of both experiences, but probably a little bit truer of the more common one, where you think the world is spinning. I didn't really have that sensation.
Right.
Just this horrible sensation in my head.
Right. It does sound pretty awful. And how long did that go on for before you saw a doctor?
Well, I saw a doctor that afternoon, but what I did, I had to go upstairs, which struck me as a terrible challenge. I decided I could get up the stairs that had open risers so I could hold on to them, so I crawled. I crawled along the floor, crawled up the stairs. And then, of course, that made me very nauseated, so I began doing a lot of vomiting. I called my husband, but he wasn't available at the time. So I sat in a chair. I basically felt like I just couldn't move. I kept vomiting. I wasn't scared. Most people are scared. I thought that I had an inner ear infection. That was my just conclusion, which, of course, was semi-accurate. But I wasn't able to walk unassisted at all. And when he came home, which was probably close to 2 hours after the onset of all this, so I would say the whole thing lasted for about 5 hours before there was significant waning of the symptoms. on that day, but I certainly didn't feel well for many days after that.
And so then at what point did they diagnose Meniere's disease for you?
About a week after that. I had gone, we went to an emergency room, and so he wanted to make sure I wasn't having a stroke, which wasn't a thought that had even crossed my mind, and so he thought I might have some kind of inner ear infection or some kind of neurological infection. I think they gave me probably meclizine that tames down vertigo, or supposed to, although I didn't think it did. And we went home and made an appointment with an ear, nose, and throat physician for the following week, who did a bunch of tests and then diagnosed me as having Meniere's disease.
Right. You said it was a very confusing time. Why was it confusing for you?
Well, I had heard of Meniere's disease before and had never hoped to have it because I knew it was recurrent, and that seemed like a pretty grim prospect. So I resisted agreeing, even though I could see why I was given the diagnosis since I had the four key symptoms. I resisted thinking that I really did have Meniere's disease. But what made it really confusing was that although I had the four key symptoms of pressure in the head, tinnitus, meaning ringing in the ears, vertigo, and imbalance, my vertigo wasn't as described in almost any pamphlet you might see, and the course of the way it went wasn't as described. You're supposed to have a horrible course of vertigo, feel tired for the rest of the day, and then feel fine the next day. That was absolutely untrue for me and never has been true. I mean, the most plaguing part of the whole thing over the past 9 years has been this sort of long-acting fatigue, lack of ambition, minimal imbalance, just kind of feeling like you're just barely getting over the flu kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like somehow this didn't seem clear to any doctor that I saw, or they weren't very curious about how I was experiencing it. And that's why it felt confusing, because I felt as if nobody really knew what was wrong with me. And I also thought that it wasn't, once the idea was that I had Meniere's, it wasn't of much interest either.
So were you working with a regular medical doctor, or were you working with an ENT?
An ENT.
Oh, really?
ENT.
Really?
Yeah.
And they weren't interested either?
Well, it depends. I mean, I know, like probably a lot of women and probably some men, I like to feel, I like a good bedside manner, kind of. I mean, I like to feel that what's wrong is, I don't know, that it's interesting. Not quite sure what I mean by that, I guess.
Well, you want to know that you're being heard and somebody has compassion for you, I would think.
Yeah, something like that.
So,
and I felt like somehow it could have been my failing, although I tend to be kind of talky, that no one that I went to understood what was really happening in this condition for me. And not that it would have made any difference about what to do about it. I mean, one of the problems with Meniere's is the main recommendation, as I'm sure the doctor that you spoke with said, is to go on a low-salt diet.
Right.
And perhaps take, some kind of diuretic, water pills often called, to reduce the amount of water in your system and that kind of thing. And that really didn't seem to make any difference for me. So
let's look at what did make a difference for you.
Time.
Okay. And how did it make a difference? Was it that you learned to live with it, cope with it, you changed your diet? What did that look like?
No, I did try changing my diet for quite a long time, and I took something called hydrochlorothiazide, which is a diuretic for a long time, too. But it seemed as if over the years I've had four different phases of the condition, different sort of vertigo equivalents. And by now, my symptoms, I don't have any really remarkable symptoms in that I don't get horrible vertigo, but I do still have episodes that I feel quite sure, arise in my inner ear, my vestibular system, that where I again feel terribly tired, my balance is compromised. I'm quite nauseated. It's great for dieting. I always lose weight several times a year because of it, because of the amount of nausea.
Mm-hmm. Not the way you want to do it, though.
No. But, I mean, that's what it has evolved into.
Okay.
I don't know if I should say, I've had two other forms of vertigo. Should I go into that?
If it's relevant to this story, yeah.
Oh, I think so. I mean, about 2 years after I first had vertigo, I think I'm right about the 2 years, I woke up in the morning with my eyes just flying all over the place. It reminded me of sort of one of those dolls whose eyes go every which way.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very different sensation. It was less like churning inside my head and more just like my eyes were flying all over. But I absolutely could not stand then either. The mercy in that was that as long as I lay absolutely still in bed, I didn't feel sick.
Right.
And so I had that for well over 24 hours. And we did, again, go back to the ENT with that.
And then the other type that you had?
The other type was, shortly after that, the symptom began to be that I tended to start in the morning. I would get up in the morning, and I would see the furniture slide across the room and then somehow return to its original place. Not quite as neatly as I've said, but it would seem to be sliding from right to left, sliding from right to left. And that would also feel, that wouldn't last very long. That would last at the most half an hour.
Right.
And then I'd again feel tired and sick for days on end and wake up that way for several mornings.
And so you went to get a different medical opinion after that experience. Did they give you a different solution?
No. The time I went to get a different medical solution was when I began waking up with double vision.
Okay.
Because double vision, by anyone's conviction, shouldn't be part of Meniere's. Because it's thought of as being more originating in the brain in some way. The reason I think it's part of Meniere's is that everything else is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So now I still wake up with double vision.
Mm-hmm.
That began a lot of years ago and has remained the way it presents.
So
I feel tired for a few days and I'll wake up in the morning and everything in the room will have its double.
Right.
It doesn't last long.
Right.
At the most, 15 minutes probably, but my eyes feel funny all day.
Mm.
And then again, I don't feel well for 2 weeks or even more.
So it's very, very much impacted your life, we can tell. So you set about to interview other people who were experiencing Meniere's disease. Why did you want to do that?
You say what?
Why did you want to do that?
Oh, for the book. I wanted to write a book because I had felt that I didn't read anything that was helpful to me. I think there's more out there now than there was in 2006, 7, and 8, but I just didn't read anything that I thought was really, really helpful that addressed my questions. And I tried to find things, and so I thought I would try to write a book that I would have found helpful in those days. And I also, because I thought that there was so much variety in my own symptoms, I wondered about other people and how this had been for them.
And you did find that people did experience this differently, correct?
Yes, yeah. So many different ways.
So what surprised you the most when you were interviewing? I think you interviewed about 50 people or so. But
yeah,
what,
just about 50 people,
what
yes,
surprised you the most?
What surprised me the most? Well, I think that what surprised me the most, and I don't know how much more time we have, this complicates things a bit. If people have benign positional vertigo, they are often well treated by a series of maneuvers that were originated by someone named John Epley. It's it couldn't be a better kind of treatment because there's no drugs, and if it works wonderfully. But there were people who, and supposedly for benign positional vertigo, you have a relatively short burst of symptoms, and then it's over for that day. And you would get this Epley if you kept having them for a Epley maneuver, if you kept having it for a series of days. But there were people who had intense vertigo, disabling vertigo, that got that diagnosis and were eventually helped, which by the maneuvers, which I just couldn't make sense of. I mean, somebody I knew who was actually a clinical therapist who barely could walk across a room. Her balance was so affected. She couldn't drive. She had an office in her house, though she could still work. And after she had the, and she, this went on for like 2 or 3 years for her. She'd gone to the doctor and nothing much had happened. But after she had the Epley maneuver, not immediately, but within a month, she felt fine. I thought that was just an amazing story and not consistent with anything you might read.
Mm. Well, it's I'd not heard of Meniere's disease, to be honest. And when I did a Google search on it, there were a lot of very famous people suffered from it. Vincent van Gogh, yeah. Depression and Meniere's disease. David Alsted, who's a skilled pianist. And he went deaf, actually, but he still continued to play the piano. Emily Dickinson, Peggy Lee, the singer, of course. So did you find that during the course of talking with these 50 people that there was a consistent treatment that did work, and were there other treatments that consistently failed? I know you're not a medical, we're not looking at this from a medical practitioner's perspective, we're looking at from a layman talking to other people who have the same issue.
Well, I don't think, other than the diet recommendation, like low salt and so forth, I don't think there is thought of as a consistent thing. You can have surgery for it. A lot of the diagnoses, say of Vincent van Gogh and all that, are of course somewhat speculative. That's just guessing from what you've read, because I've also read he might have been a schizophrenic and so forth. So various people, unless you can talk to somebody, it's a little hard to feel sure of it. But more modern-day people, yes. Now, I'm blocking on the name of the astronaut whom I included in my book.
It wasn't an astronaut. Yeah. It was actually the first man on the moon, first man to go out there.
He had actual surgery to remove some of his inner ear, which is not lightly done.
Right.
That's a very major kind of surgery, and it evidently cured him. But I talked to two people who had that done. One person said it did nothing for her, I think it was, and the other person felt that it did, but it wasn't perfect.
Right. Well, Linda, I think you've sharing information in your book here is probably really helpful to people who are having this, situation and not knowing where to turn for help. Again, I want to stress to listeners that Linda Howard-Zanana wrote this book, Vertigo, When the World Spins Out of Control. She's not a medical practitioner. She's somebody who suffered with Meniere's disease herself and still does and couldn't find answers. It was very confusing. So, Linda, I want to thank you for being with us today. Thank you so much.
And you're very welcome. It was a nice thing to be able to do.
The website where people can find more about you, if you could just quickly give that, we're right at the end of our show.
Yeah, right. It's called Vertigo8, the numeral 8.com.
Super. Vertigo8.com is the website. Linda Howard-Zanana.
Yes.
Vertigo, When the World Spins Out of Control, Meniere's Disease, Benign Positional Vertigo, and Other Vestibular Illnesses. As I said, she interviewed 50 other people for this book. Thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate your time. If you have questions or comments on today's show, you can find us at conversationslive.net or email info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net, or you can call me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And of course, you can find us on Facebook, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. And I want to just thank Eric Ryder, as always, for keeping us live today. Lots of challenges always when we're dealing with live radio, and it always manages to get us through. So thanks again for being with us. We're going to take a little travel and adventure next Monday, so hope you can join us then too. See you then. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, adventure, facing the unknown head on, and finding spirituality in the most unlikely of places with the mystical backpacker and the cyclist who rode a tandem bike through 81 countries. Keep up with show news on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and follow on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. And be sure and tune in live every Monday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.